You've reached Every Little Things helpline for Earthlings. Leave your humanoid question after the beep.
Flora, I have a factual emergency. I've been thinking all this time, where did the green alien start? How did we get this? Have we seen a green alien before? The little green guy? Time to find out. Thank you, Flora. This is Willie. Bye-bye. Hello?
Hey, Willie, it's Flora from ELT.
Hello, Flora.
We come in peace.
That's what they say. That's what they say. Let's hope so.
Describe the green alien you're thinking of.
Describe the green alien. Well, kind of like a little person with a big head. I don't know, about 3.5 feet tall. Unusual long, skinny arms. Big eyes, kind of like a marsupial, but much bigger. And some of them have a big belly.
Okay, so a knee-high verdant alien.
Yes.
Also known as a little green man.
Yes.
Where do you see these LGM?
LGM, I like that.
Any close encounters?
Well, I think I've seen them all my life. You see it in movies, you see it in magazines, you see it in news clips, and the John Doe's, that's the criminal images that they draw. That's the face that they come up with.
Like when someone reports seeing an alien.
Yes.
The little green man is the John Doe of aliens.
Exactly. And it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense.
What doesn't make sense?
I don't think that that's what they would look like. I don't think that they would look anything like us.
What do you think they would look like?
I don't know, like a tapeworm, maybe? I just can't see them having legs and arms and eyes and ears the way we do. It just boggles my mind.
Right, like of all the possible depictions of aliens, why did we settle on a saucer-eyed, pot-bellied, small green man to be the stand-in for all of alien kind?
Exactly. Where did he come from, Flora?
Willie, we found just the person to help us probe your question.
I'm so excited, Flora. I can't wait to hear this.
Our LGM expert is Pierre Lagrange. He's a sociologist of science and pseudoscience in Paris, France.
Hi, Willie.
Bonjour.
And he studies why we believe what we believe.
So I worked on the beginning of the flying saucer controversy in the United States. And of course, I heard about the little green man. So there was a moment when I needed to understand how this little green man term arrived on the scene.
He had exactly your question.
Yes, I can't believe it. It's exactly my question. See, other people think the same.
But it's a large question.
So Willie, settle in, because the Petit Homme Vert invasion did not happen overnight. It began long ago in a galaxy very nearby.
We find green creature in the fantastic folklore with the goblins, the fairies, and the devil. The color green is very often associated with the devil. In French, for example, we have names like Verbois, Verdelais, and they include the word vert, which is the French word for green.
Interesting.
So, for light years, we have told tall tales about green goblins and devils. But we have a short story to thank for the first green alien. It's by a writer named Edgar Rice Burroughs.
I definitely heard the name.
Burroughs is very well known because he's the inventor of Tarzan.
Okay, all right, okay.
And his very first story was about Mars.
And it's a story of a man from Earth, John Carter, who travels to Mars. And on Mars, there are several races of people. And some are giant humanoids with four arms, and they are green.
Burroughs invented the BGM, the Big Green Martian. And I want to send you a picture of this not-so-little but very green man.
Okay.
We will also put it on Instagram at ELT Show. And if you're listening on Spotify, you can find it on our episode page.
What in the world? Look at him.
Describe him.
He is about... I would say 9 feet tall, four arms, green, somewhat muscular, with tusks coming out of his mouth, kind of like a walrus. And he has little horns for ears, kind of like Shrek on his head.
I personally like that the alien is wearing short shorts and a wrestling belt, two gold bracelets, and a chunky anklet.
Yes, you're absolutely right. He's a bling master.
So, as you can see, there were a lot of puzzling creative choices, including why Burroughs decided the aliens should be green.
We don't know why they are green. I would say that there are several possibilities.
One possibility is that Burroughs was just doing what we've done forever. Why not make space goblins the same color as regular goblins? Another possibility is that green was a red flag to make it obvious that these beings were not human.
As far as I know, we don't have humans that are green. So perhaps the idea is to create a creature that would be entirely different from us. So the color green was perhaps the best way to show truly alien kind of creatures.
I can see that.
Whatever the reason, these gargantuan emerald Martians were a huge hit.
They became very famous because the novels were really extremely famous during the first part of the 20th century.
Was this like a blockbuster at the time?
Oh, yeah. For several generations. Many scientists chose to become scientists because they had read the Mars stories of Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Really? Like who? Anyone we would, any names we would know?
Carl Sagan. Carl Sagan was a real fan of the Burroughs stories.
Really? I love that.
Burroughs invented the green alien, but it was huge and had four arms and wore gold jewelry. It wasn't the wee avocado gentleman that we picture today.
Oh, God, absolutely not. He's completely different. The little green man is probably, a fifth of his size.
Right. So that transformation from BGM to LGM happened 20 years later, when science fiction really blasted off, thanks to the explosion of pulp magazines.
They are called the pulps because of the poor quality of the paper.
I see. Kind of like newspaper, maybe?
Yeah. They're inexpensive fiction magazines that were published in the first half of the 20th century. And pulp is both a style of writing and a medium. Basically, they were cheap, fun, and alien-forward.
Millions of people read those magazines in those times. The very first one was called Amazing Stories. Then there were others like Astounding Stories, Planet Stories, Astonishing Stories. Well, all sorts of magazines like that. And they were full of stories about alien invasions.
They just started multiplying.
Exactly. And out of that pulp petri dish came the aliens you called about.
At the end of the 1930s, there were authors who started to introduce the term Little Green Man.
Here's the thing that I'm wondering. Why are they always men? Why are they little green men?
Oh, I'm sure that we find little green creatures of both sexes, perhaps more than two sexes. But the term that remains in the collective memory is little green man. But it's a problem of the science fiction literature. Most science fiction readers were men. And so the stories were written mostly for boys and for men.
So the term little green man was in use by the 1930s.
A lot earlier than I thought.
But only sci-fi fans knew about little green men at this point. So how did LGM go mainstream?
That is my big question. How did they go mainstream?
It took another trend to rocket them out of the world of science fiction and into people's everyday lives. Alien encounters.
Alien encounters.
And not just in the pages of science fiction.
That's the interesting part because science fiction is only imagination. So people were reading stories, but they didn't believe in these stories. What happens in 1947 is that suddenly there are people who report things in the sky and who say that they saw something that is real.
I'm curious why at this time there's increase in UFO sightings. What do you think is happening there?
It's difficult. There is not an increase of UFO sightings. UFO sightings began in 1947.
I've heard of this.
Before 1947, you don't have anything like flying saucer. The term flying saucer and flying disc were invented in 1947. And the entire phenomenon emerged at that time.
Oh, my God. So it started in 1947. Why? What happened in 1947?
Okay. It all started with a high-profile sighting of an unidentified flying object.
Studio, this man, Kenneth Arnold, who we believe may be able to give us a first-hand account and give you the same on what happened. Kenneth, first
a pilot was flying over Mount Rainier in Washington and claimed that he saw nine strange objects in the sky.
They looked something like a pie plate that was cut in half with a sort of a convex triangle in the rear. It's just as much a mystery to me as it is to everyone else who's been calling me the last 24 hours wondering what it was.
Well, Kenneth, newspapers across the country picked up the story, and a slew of other sightings followed that year.
July 8, 1947. A flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
We have received and analyzed between 1 and 2,000 reports.
A young Frenchman photographed this flying saucer, or is it?
UFO sightings skyrocketed, and soon after, people started reporting alien encounters. And around this time, one sighting in particular completed the LGM takeover. This sighting teleported Lilliputian Viridian individuals out of the pages of science fiction and into newspapers across the country. And we're going to tell you that story after the break.
Oh my God, this rabbit hole gets deeper and deeper.
Willie, are you ready for this story?
I am ready, Flora.
Okay, continue to be settled in, because we are about to tell you about a strange encounter that catapulted little green men into the national spotlight.
What was it?
Let me start by introducing you to Bill Thomas.
Hello.
Bill lived in the town where this incident happened, Kelly, Kentucky, about an hour and a half northwest of Nashville.
It's a small town. Everybody knows everybody and kind of knows something about their business.
Bill says it's a quiet town, you know, a place where not much happens, disincluding the evening of August 21st, 1955, when something did.
It was getting dark. In fact, it was dark. You could hear, I call it the night sounds. You could hear the bugs, the crickets, the whippoorwills, screech owls.
I can hear it and I can almost see it.
So Bill was 14 and he was on his way home, but he decided to make a detour.
I was riding my bicycle with a little generator on it. We're talking about total one-lane gravel roads. If a car met on them, each one had to pick a side. But I stopped out to see my little sweetheart and talk to her daddy. At that period in time, if you was going to stop and talk to a young lady, you went up and knocked on the door and you asked her parents. And then they would tell you whether or not you could talk to her or go away, boy. Well, asked her daddy if we could sit out on the porch and talk. It was okay, and we did. We talked just a little bit and then started hearing a commotion at the Sutton family's house.
The Suttons were the neighbors up the road.
They were shooting, and some of the bullets, quite frankly, we could hear them as it went by. I don't know if you ever had a bullet go past you or not. Go, and that's kind of what you heard.
Do you remember what your girlfriend said when the shooting began?
Yeah. Oh, shit. That's what she said. Excuse me, but that's what she said. With that, I said, let's get over on the other side of the porch. And we did, and got off on the ground on the opposite side of the porch. We didn't want to get shot. So anyway, we was talking about what in the world's going on up there, just hollering, screaming, and I didn't have a clue.
Willie, do you know where this is going?
Oh, Lord. Did he see anything?
He didn't see anything. He hightailed it out of there. But the next morning, Bill said he talked to Lucky Sutton, one of the guys who lived up there at that house where Bill had heard the shooting. And Lucky Sutton said they'd had company.
And he said, "Bill, I was scared to death, absolutely scared to death. I didn't know what was going on." Said these little suckers was 3.5-4 foot high, somewhere in there, had real long arms. He said, "But I want to tell you something. I don't know what they were, but I don't ever want to see them again."
"You're freaking me out."
So there had been lots of sightings and encounters before that night, but this is the big one for our story. This is the encounter that cements it for the little green man.
"Ooh, what do you mean by that?"
"What color do you think these alleged aliens were? I'll give you one guess."
"Green." "Green."
"No."
"No, they weren't green. They were silver gray."
"What?"
"I know. This is a weird twist. Here's Pierre again."
"The witness never described green creatures, but suddenly, in the article that were published in the press, the journalist started to call these creatures little green men."
"But what, was this a national story?"
"Yeah, it became national news because the Associated Press and the United Press started to send the story to all their newspapers. The following days, it was everywhere. And what is interesting is that it became so popular that a few days later, the members of the Congress, of the U.S. Congress in Washington, D.C., the Democrats and the Republicans, started to call their colleagues little green men. So it became a political name for the Democrats to speak about the Republicans and the reverse. From that moment, everybody heard about the term little green man, and it became immensely popular from that very moment.
So the reason little green men are a mass cultural phenomenon is because of an embellishment by a reporter?
Yeah.
"Oh my God. Talk about fake news."
"Yeah.
So you think it was just a joke and it just took off?"
"Well, why the reporter embellished the story, not clear. Maybe he was a sci-fi fan. Maybe he read a lot of Edgar Rice Burroughs. Maybe the reporter was making a joke because the town was called Kelly and there's a shade of green called Kelly Green. But in any case, by the end of 1955, the LGM invasion was complete. Little Green Men had become a household name."
"Wow, really? That's amazing. That's really amazing."
"But the thing that still doesn't seem clear is why Little Green Men stuck around. In the last 60 years, lots of new aliens have been invented. Mucus-covered aliens that pop out of people's stomachs, aliens that like to ride in bike baskets, tentacled aliens that write symbols in squid ink. And yet, the old-school original is still our John Doe of aliens."
"Yes, yes, yes."
So why has the little green man persisted? Before we could close the saucer door on this story, we beamed up one more expert with an interest in pint-sized chartreuse chaps. His name is Roger Luckhurst.
"Hi there, how you doing?"
"Hello. Hello, Roger."
Roger is a literature and cultural history professor in London, and he studies science fiction and thinks a lot about what our monsters mean to us.
"I've written books on vampires and zombies. I did a book on mummy curses and also a history of corridors."
"Corridors? That was a left turn."
"It is a bit of a left turn, although it's all about how we're frightened of corridors. So, you know, if anyone ever asks you that question on the program, then I'm your man."
"I've never heard anyone afraid of corridors, but I will find someone."
"Yeah, find someone and tell them to call. 833-RING-ELT. Roger said part of the reason why little green men caught on is that those three little words are doing a lot of work.
"I think it's an incredibly simple way of condensing the experience, which allows you to both report the testimony of the families that were involved and yet can mock it gently at the same time. It's just the economy of that kind of language that means that, yes, that's exactly what we needed. We didn't have it before, and now we're going to run with that. But anyone who tries to engineer a phrase like that nearly always fails. That's the great mystery of this. Like the phrase flying saucers, completely accidental, completely in passing, and yet that's the thing that sticks.
Catchphrases are mysterious.
They are, yeah. It's how memes work as well, isn't it? You know, memes in the sense that they just pick up and work through culture.
Yes, it seems like this was a very early meme.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it, I think.
It's like if people in the future are going to be like, why did people get so into lolcat? You know what I mean? Like, where did that come from?
Where did that come from? Yes, why? Yeah. Yes, and in fact, I even know one of the people who put Grumpy Cat, if you've ever come across that, on across every single social media platform. I'm completely mystified about how he makes a living or why he does this. But, you know, yeah, he is the man behind Grumpy Cat. And you just think that's amazing. But why?
So pretty much what he's saying is, it's a pop culture thing.
They're a meme. A very long-lasting meme.
For, what, 70 years now?
64 years. Yeah, take the color blue, mix in the color yellow, add goblins, science fiction, gold jewelry, night sounds, and a bad reporter, and voila, you have a 64-year-old little green meme.
Sora, I knew you would find the answer.
If you have a question you need help finding an answer to, give us a call, 833-RING-ELT. And are you a human being that comes in a matching set, otherwise known as a twin? We want to hear your burning twin questions. If you're a twin, hop on the line with your twin, give us a call. Or maybe you're the parent of twins. Or maybe you just have a long-standing curiosity about twins. Call us with your questions. 833-RING-ELT. That's 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored and mixed by Dara Hirsch. Take me to your leader. Goodbye.
Hey, ELT team. I know I'm a little bit late to the game, but how low can you moil? Oh, man, that was low, even for you all. Oh, that one hurt. Love your show. Thanks all. Bye.